Good morning, Your Honors. Raul Montes for Mr. Josedad Mariscal. I'd like to reserve a couple of minutes, Your Honors, for the rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors. In this case, Your Honors, Mr. Mariscal made an entry back in February 19th of 1997, because at that time he was not re-paroled by the then INS, now the DHS, and therefore he should be in deportation proceedings rather than exclusion proceedings. At that time, he was free from actual or constructive restraint, so therefore under the matter of Sanchez, he would be considered to have made an entry into the country at that time. And for that reason, Your Honor, he should be deemed as at that moment to have entered the country. Now, the reason that's important, Your Honor, is because there's several benefits to being in deportation versus exclusion proceedings. One of them being the right to bond, the right to a bond hearing in deportation and not so in exclusion.
Well, counsel, he's still in the country, isn't he?
Yes, he is, Your Honor.
You got to stay, right?
Well,
is he on a stay right now?
But that's pursuant to the court, Your Honor, yes.
Yeah. What judge signed that order? Did a judge sign that order, staying it? Did a judge ever consider it?
Well, at that time, Your Honor, I believe that that was an automatic stay when...
That's not what the statute says, is it? You had to make application. It wasn't automatic. Didn't you apply for a stay when you filed your petition?
Yes, we did. We did, Your Honor.
Yeah, okay, so it's not automatic. So what judge considered that? Was there a hearing?
Well, that was through paperwork, Your Honor. We did.
What did you do?
We filed a petition for a motion for stay.
All right, did you get an order?
Yeah, I believe we did, Your Honor.
Was it signed by a judge? Or a panel?
I'd have to refer to the record, but I believe it would have to be either a clerk's order pursuant to the court.
You mean some judge directed the clerk to sign an order?
I'd have to look at the paper, Your Honor, but as I understand it,
Well, maybe the government could. Can you help us? That stay, who signed the stay order?
Your Honor, I don't have the administrative record before me.
Well, I have a few questions for the government, too.
Yeah.
But I'm just asking counsel here. I find a file here that some staff attorneys considered the matter. And what I'm getting at is, what are the grounds that you asserted for keeping him in the country after the BIA had directed his deportation?
Yes, Your Honor, in my motion for stay. And also, I have motion was not opposed by the government, by the way, Your Honors.
Okay, those are questions I have for the government. So it's an unopposed order. They didn't even defend against this motion that you made, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And
you didn't sign a stipulation with the other parties agreeing to this stay, did you, and submit it to the court? This is your motion, and your motion, the merits of your motion are going to rise or fall on what you submitted. The government says we're going to stay out of it, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's right.
Now, why did you say that he had a right to stay?
Well, our first argument was that the BIA had clearly erred in summarily dismissing the case, and then
if there's any kind of mistake made by the BIA, that's grounds for a stay. Is that what Congress said in the act?
Well, Your Honor, basically, I believe this was one of the first motions that we did in our office back in let's see.
Well, let me ask you this. If we go through this whole argument today and the panel concludes that the BIA was correct in what they did, should we now lift that stay so that he can be deported immediately? Is that our obligation? Or do we have to wait for an opinion and wait for the mandate to go down 30 days after we file an opinion?
I would say, sir, Your Honor, that we wait for a mandate.
We wait for the mandate? Where does the statute say that?
I don't have the authority presently with me, Your Honor.
I mean, that's the way you would prefer to have it.
Yes, that would be a preference. Yes,
okay. I think I understand your position.
Yes.
Thank you.
In addition, Your Honor, the evidence submitted by the government, and here the evidence is all, we would say, interrelated. Obviously, the most damaging evidence was the testimony, well, not testimony, but was the alleged interview of Officer Padilla, who was, by the time of the trial, deceased, and who did not record his apparent interview, assuming there was an interview, of Mr. Mariscal. And apparently it was witnessed by Officer Thorpe. And in that case, obviously, there's no foundation to introduce that that document.
Well, I have another question for you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you at the hearings before the IJ, do you bear the burden of proving your case?
Your Honor, it,
by testimony and other evidence?
No, Your Honor.
You don't? Does the government bear the burden of showing that he's deportable?
The in exclusion matters, the respondent has to establish that he is a lawful resident first. And if he establishes that he's a lawful resident, which he in this case he did because he had a green card, lawful residence alien card. Once that's established, then the burden shifts to the government to establish that he is excludable from the country. And so by the time that the government was introducing the evidence against Mr. Mariscal, at that point, it was the government's burden, not the respondents, to establish that he had, in fact, attempted to smuggle six aliens into the country. In addition to that, Your Honor, the descendant order, we have the...
Now, then he left the country voluntarily, right?
Yes, he did.
And then he reentered.
Yes, Your Honor.
He didn't have documentation on reentry?
Well, that's an interesting question, Your Honor, because he made a false claim, admittedly so, to United States citizenship background.
Where's the burden of proof on that? He claims citizenship, right?
Yes.
The government has to prove he isn't a citizen, or he has to prove he is
no,
a citizen?
No, he would have to prove. Since he's coming into the country, he's knocking at the door. He's
yes.
got to establish that he's either a citizen or a lawful resident alien.
Yeah.
And
he couldn't prove either one.
Oh, yes, he did establish the that he was a lawful resident alien. That's why the government decided
to... Did he give that up when he left the country?
At which point, Your
Honor? Reentry, right?
Well, he was stopped at the port of entry on May the 16th. On May the 17th, the notice of exclusion was issued. After that, he made a departure, and he came back
yeah.
with his green card, and his green card was lifted at that point because he was allegedly excludable. But the only notice of exclusion, the Form I-122, is the one issued back on May the 17th, 95, Your Honors.
Now, he had a smuggling problem, right?
Yes, Your Honor. It was alleged that he was smuggling the six undocumented aliens.
He was entitled to stay in the United States as an alien smuggler, right?
Well, Your Honor, all the facts are agreed by the government, as stated by the immigration judge, are agreed by the respondent and the government, except one, knowledge. And that was the...
he didn't know that he was smuggling aliens in?
Well, Your Honor, based on what the record shows, we would say that the government has not established, met its burden of proof.
Okay. Yeah. The government proved that he had aliens and brought them into the country. He was a smuggler of aliens, right?
The government has proved that he knowingly brought aliens into the country.
Okay. Under all the circumstances, the IJ found, as a matter of fact, that he had knowledge, right?
That's correct. That's what the IJ found.
He went to the BIA and they didn't give you any help, so here we are, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And our...
And you're having a good time this morning.
Okay, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
No. Wait, I didn't say...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I said you're having a good time.
I'm sorry. I saw the clock. And
We don't grant any reprieves here.
Yes, right.
Okay, anything else?
I see my time is almost up, Your Honor.
We'll give you some time for rebuttal.
Oh, thank you.
We give lots of time.
All right. I appreciate that.
Anything else?
No, not right now.
Anything else?
No.
Thank you, Your Honor.
No, you just made it, though. Right out of the clock.
Thank you, Mr. Watt.
Thank you.
We'll give you some time. Give us some time.
All right. Good
morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Teresa Healy, and I'm here to represent the government in this matter.
Can I pursue some stay matters with you preliminarily?
Sure, Your Honor.
When the government makes no objection to the petitioner's request for a stay, that doesn't mean the government's consenting. It probably means the government's so busy you don't have time to cover all of these, doesn't it? Is that what's going on?
I can't answer for...
Well, all right. In the cases you're familiar with, have you done a number of immigration cases?
First one.
This is my first...
Oh, is it?
Yeah, case, okay. For
one, so it's a good time
for oil, yes.
She has plausible deniability.
Yeah. Okay. Are you aware of any case where the alien has not been granted a stay under the new rules, the new statutes?
Your Honor, I haven't done enough cases to really be able to fairly answer that question.
Nothing in CLE or your training that would alert you to stay away from stays? They're not worth bothering with or anything?
I've never been told that in training.
All right. Go ahead with the case on the merits.
Your Honors, I believe there are two issues before the Court in this case. And the first issue is whether the petitioner, in fact, made an entry into the United States following his immigration hearing in February 1997, if and when the Immigration and Naturalization Service failed to issue a piece of paper to him extending his parole. And the second issue is whether the immigration judge violated petitioner's rights to due process by admitting various evidence in the form of documents and testimony. And I'll address each of these issues in turn. I just wanted to start out saying that under the law in effect at the time that Mr. Mariscal attempted to enter the United States, there were two types of immigration proceedings. There were deportation proceedings, and those applied to those who were physically present in the United States and had made an entry, whether by inspection or by evading inspection. And the second type of proceedings were exclusion proceedings, and those were for individuals who were apprehended before they entered the United States. In essence, they were knocking at the door of the border, and before they were able to come in, they were stopped by the Immigration Service and placed in exclusion proceedings. And this is the type of proceedings which apply to petitioner. When a person is in exclusion proceedings, the Attorney General at the time of Mr. Mariscal's stop, he had the authority or discretion to parole somebody into the United States, which enabled them to remain inside of the United States without having formally entered. It's a legal fiction that exists, and it's an administrative advice that exists so that the person can remain inside of the United States basically while their immigration case is litigated.
Ms. Healy, we understand the concept of parole. What struck me as somewhat odd was the service's practice of extending the parole for fixed periods of time by literally issuing a piece of paper to the alien saying your parole is now extended for 2 months until your next hearing. And if I understand Mr. Montes's argument, that's fine if the service wants to do it that way, but at some point the service stumbled and forgot to give him an extension. And therefore, his argument is that the parole by its own terms, which was limited in time, expired. And at that moment in time, he effected an entry
into
the United States. What's your response?
However, this parole statute, the parole regulation, and case law does not support his position that just because a piece of paper is not given and parole is in effect terminated equates or means that an individual makes an entry into the United States. Rather, the statute, the regulation, and case law all seem to indicate that if parole is terminated and expires, that the person remains an applicant for admission into the United States and that the government can proceed against them in an exclusion proceeding, and that they just because the parole status is terminated does not, in effect, give them a right to be placed under deportation proceedings.
I don't know if you would know this, but then what's the purpose of giving them these fixed extensions of parole? If under the statute, once you give them notice that we are placing you in exclusion proceedings, and then, as I understand your argument, until those proceedings are completed, the person is in law still in exclusion status, if you will. Why did the service even bother with these pieces of paper? It just kind of muddies the water, doesn't it?
Well, it just, I think, was an administrative practice that existed to sort of put the person on notice of the fact that they had the parole status.
Are you telling me because you know that, or are you just kind of speculating? Because my understanding of the record was that it was so that if he were stopped by a Border Patrol officer or an immigration inspector, he would have something to present to an official to show what his current status was vis-a-vis the immigration laws. Did I misunderstand that, or?
No. However, I don't believe that the statute, the cases, or the regulations support that just because you don't have that piece of paper means that you've effected an entry into the United States.
So is your answer to my question, you're not sure what the purpose was of this permit system?
Well, they're just trying to be nice, that's all.
We all know what a big heart the guy in is.
Your Honor, I guess my answer to the question is I don't know the exact reason for issuing the pieces of paper, but it was the agency decided that that was the way they wanted to.
So your point is whatever the agency did by virtue of bureaucratic paperwork, his status under the law never changed.
That's correct.
Okay.
And counsel attempts to state that an entry was made under the Board of Immigration Appeals decision Matter of Sanchez. However, that case is really inapplicable here. That's a deportation case. The only similarity in that case was that the individual was stopped at the border and by officials, and he was taken into custody, and at that point did not make an entry into the United States. However, the next day, I believe, he was released. He was not placed under any immigration proceeding, exclusion proceedings, or deportation proceedings. He was released into the United States so that he could face criminal charges, and therefore he was under no reach of the immigration laws at that point.
Counsel, if we agree with the government's position, should we enter an immediate order lifting the stay? Because all the statutory criteria for the granting of a stay are pretty much evaporated once we come to a conclusion that the government's position is correct, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would the government act on that stay lift and deport or not?
Well, you don't know.
I just want to know.
To speak for the DHS, I don't know if they would how immediately that they would enact the order of exclusion or deportation.
What happens? They issue a bag and baggage order?
Your Honor, I currently don't know what type of mechanism or how they would exactly proceed in this particular case. I think they proceed on a case-by-case basis.
Well, what's the government's position? Do you want the stay to stay? Do you want the stay to remain in force, or do you want the stay lifted?
Well, of course, the government would want the stay lifted should the court find for the government.
Well, do we have the authority to lift the stay that's been imposed by the
by whom?
INS?
No, that's not who granted it.
Yeah, I thought it was our stay. Isn't it our stay?
It's in the Ninth Circuit stay, yes.
Oh, it's our stay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who did that terrible thing?
Staff attorneys.
Well, you probably have a rule on that.
Well, the stay says that it remains in force until the court otherwise directs. So I'm asking, should we direct or not?
I would say that if the court rules for the government, then stay should be lifted, yes.
Then there'll be an appeal to the Supreme Court and may reimpose the stay.
Yes, if there was an appeal to the Supreme Court, yes.
How many of these are they going to hear? I have 8 this morning for them.
Choice.
Pick anyone they want.
That's up to them. The other issue I wanted to discuss this morning was the due process issue. I believe that in this case, the immigration judge acted in accordance with due process. All of the evidence that was admitted by the court in this case met the requisite test. It was both probative of Mr. Mariscal's engagement in alien smuggling, and it was fundamentally fair. And I just wanted to distinguish the case of Murphy versus INS from the present case cited by Petitioner in his reply brief. In that case, the court found that it was fundamentally unfair to admit into evidence the form I-213. And the basis for the court's finding was that the Immigration and Naturalization Service failed to produce witnesses to lay the foundation for the statements made in the I-213. In this particular case, in contrast, the Immigration and Naturalization Service presented 3 witnesses, all having direct knowledge to the events in the case of Mr. Mariscal, to lay a foundation. They were subject to cross-examination that was very extensive. And moreover, the evidence that was admitted, the I-213 and sworn statements, was given to Petitioner in advance, and he had a chance to review this evidence and to make objections.
Okay.
And I'd just like to wrap up if nobody has any other questions for me, Your Honors. The immigration judge's decision finding that Mariscal was properly in exclusion proceedings and that the government proved by clear, convincing, and unequivocal evidence that he knowingly attempted to smuggle 6 undocumented women across the border should be affirmed.
Is there evidence that he was paid? Refresh my memory.
Pardon me?
Is there evidence that he was paid? You have money for doing this?
He was, when he was apprehended by the immigration officials, he did have a fair amount of cash on him, I believe over $1,000 in cash on his person.
Okay.
$1,798.
Yes.
According to the I-213.
Yes, that's correct.
You know, we got everything up there, believe me.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Is this your first appellate argument?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
You did a nice job.
You are now a combat veteran.
Thank you, Your Honor. The government would submit.
Thank you. Ms. Healy, I do have one suggestion for you, because I know you're new at this. And I know that they frequently ask you to cover other people's cases because you're coming out here and to do other arguments. But we really do rely on counsel for both sides to thoroughly know the record. And it's helpful if you have the administrative record with you so that if you get questions like you did this morning, you can respond to them. Okay?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honor, just a brief point. Regarding the money that he had in his possession, he also, at the time of the court hearing, produced a letter from the Home Depot that he was going to do a transaction with the Home Depot for the for a certain amount of money, which would cover that money that he had as a possession. So it wasn't something that
he was going to buy something.
I believe, Your Honor, yes, he was going to buy something. He was either repairing, doing a remodeling at his home, or one of those situations. But it was enough to cover the transaction with the Home Depot. The other thing is,
he wasn't going to buy a new gasoline tank, was he?
Well, if the prices keep going up, maybe. Your Honor, as far as the factors for a stay of removability at this point, the likelihood of success, Well, the Court can answer that better. But I would say that we would argue that he does fit that qualification. The importance of the questions raised by Mr. Mariscal, the irreparable injury, because if he is, in fact, excluded from the country, then there is no way that he can.
Well, counsel, the standard that's been adopted by the Ninth Circuit is not necessarily the statutory standard. And under our General Order 6.4, we're looking generally at the injunction standard. And that's a weighing test. And I'm thinking, coming on the bench this morning, that we're never going to know more about this case than when we get through with your argument and we go back into the conference room to discuss this case. We've had an opportunity to read your briefs. We've listened to your argument. We've had an examination of the IJ record. We have done some in-chambers research and briefing. And at this point, unless this case takes some crazy turn someplace down the line with another case from the Supreme Court or research or something you call to our attention late that changes the course of it, we're pretty much on course to write an opinion or a disposition. It may be a memorandum disposition or maybe a published opinion. I don't know at this point. But we're pretty geared up at this point. And I'm saying, what in the world are we keeping this stay for? The balance will tip when, I don't know what my other two judges are going to say. They may disagree with me or I with them. But once we cohesively as a panel come to some kind of a resolution, it seems to me that if we are to rule in favor of the service, then the stay should be lifted. If we were to rule in favor of your client and send this back for a rehearing or some other matter that bothered us or the law has changed, then you're going to prevail, and I'd leave the stay in place because there's no reason to send him away. He's going to probably win and stay here and get citizenship sooner or later. You see what I mean?
Yes, Your Honor. We would say, Your Honor, that, you know, reasonable minds can differ, Your Honor, and if they
we may have a 2-1 panel, but we're going to be of a mind to do something.
Yes, but if a writ is filed with the Supreme Court, then
the Supreme Court can grant you another stay if you can show just cause for it. And I'm sure you could, because the Supreme Court's not going to take it unless you've got some horrendous problem that needs addressing on a national basis.
I guess, Mr. Montes, the issue that's troubling me is that it seems that Congress has essentially changed the presumption in IRERA and has essentially said that at least for permanent rules cases, you can continue to litigate your entitlement to relief even if the alien is removed from the United States. Whereas, as I understand the law in the pre-IRERA context, or even in transitional rules cases, if the alien is removed, then he loses the opportunity to continue prosecuting his petition for relief. So given that change in the statutory standard, to follow up on what Judge Beezer was asking you about, doesn't that change the standard that we ought to apply in determining whether to continue injunctive relief that we have issued to preserve the status quo?
Well, Your Honor, I believe if you get into the factors of that may affect the irreparable injury factor or the equities factor, but I believe the other.
That's my question. I mean, doesn't it? I mean, clearly, in the old rules case, if you had the Hobson's choice of stay in the United States, as long as you're still here, you can pursue relief. But if you're removed, you've lost your entitlement.
That's correct.
To litigate, Congress has now taken that irreparable harm away by saying the alien may continue to litigate his claim for relief. He just can't do it remaining in the United States if the BIA has ordered him removed or deported.
Well, Your Honor, but I still think as far as the effect of him being able in a position to pursue his legal claim as a practical matter, you know, having an attorney, having the ability to pay an attorney,
Well, there's no question that it makes it harder. I mean, we've
yes.
all represented clients in foreign countries, and it's harder to do. There's no question about that. But Congress presumably understood that when it changed the rules and said, that's the way we want you to do it.
Yes, but it's still, I believe, the same standard, Your Honor, applied in either case, and I believe that...
I guess that's the question I'm asking, because it seems to me the standard has changed.
I don't believe, Your Honor. It's just, as far as I see, it would be the same standard.
Are you familiar with Section 1252F2 of the statute and the standard that's expressed there?
Where's Jazz when I need him?
It's a clear and convincing evidence standard. That's a pretty heavy burden to bear. Now, that's one down from the criminal standard. It's the fraud standard.
Yes, that would be between the...
That's the language that Congress uses. And you want me to apply equity after Congress directs specific language be applied? I don't know as I'm at liberty to do that.
But, Your Honor, I believe this case would satisfy from our position.
Okay. That's fine. That's a good argument. If you feel strongly about it, I'm certainly willing to listen. But I'm going to consider the record, and I'm going to consider the result. And when we take it under, if it's submitted, we'll take it up.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks, both counsel.
Thank you very much.